Bang bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Tessa.
And you can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Bang Bangers Pod with a Z. And email us your chaotic horny thoughts on True Blood only, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. And that is also with a Z.
Have you been getting horny thoughts that are not on True Blood?
I think that we just wanted to preempt.
Okay,
that
I see. Don't be creepy, people.
Yes, do not be creepy. I don't know if we've gotten anybody's thoughts, period, which is, yes, like a shameless beg for emails to this wonderful email address we have provided you. You can say anything as long as it's about True Blood. And this week we're discussing season 1, episode 9, Plaisir d'Amour. I can't say that as good as Lazzy can, I apologize. This episode originally aired November 2nd, 2008. It was written by Brian Buckner and directed by Anthony and M. Hemingway. Really quickly, we have a summary from Wiki, and this is what happens in the episode. Bill breaks a vampire taboo in saving Sookie from vampire Longshadow's attack and must pay a steep price as a result. Jason and Amy break their own taboo by kidnapping a vampire named Eddie in order to harvest his blood. With Letty Mae apparently cured, a skeptical Tara consults with Miss Jeanette about exorcising her own inner demon. Sookie returns home to yet another horrific tragedy, prompting Bill to enlist an unlikely bodyguard, Sam, to protect her while he's away. Before we get into the plot, Tessa, please tell me what you thought about this episode.
I hadn't really thought until you read that summary about the amount of taboo breaking that happens in that episode, but that summary is right. This episode really is about, like, a ton of people doing things that they wouldn't have thought they would do, or, you know, are against, like, some kind of cultural or legal, you know, prohibition, which I think is really interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that before. I like this ep. I love True Blood season 1 episodes. They're all good in my opinion, and I'm always going to love an ep that involves Pam in a major role. I know this isn't her first episode, but she has a lot more to do in this episode. And also, I forgot how much stuff happens in every single episode of this series. Mm-hmm. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, "Damn, like 500 things just happened."
Yeah, I think that is the benefit of this is a 12 episode season. Actually, all the seasons of True Blood have 12 episodes, which is just so much longer than usual. I mean, usual as of now, you know, the show came out in 2008, but we're lucky to get 10 episodes. And honestly, like, usually when we get 10 episodes of a new show, I hope they needed 10 episodes, because I really think that, like, 8 is a sweeter spot. But then True Blood comes along and completely proves that that's not always true.
It turns out you can have enough plot to fill 12-hour episodes.
These episodes are jam-packed, and there's so many characters. I love, now that we're in the back half of the season, that we get Hoyt doing something in every episode. You know, we're seeing more of Renee. Like, we're honestly seeing more sides of Jason every episode. Like, it continues.
on his sexual Pam, journey.
I completely forgot that Pam dressed like a bougie PTA mom. Mm-hmm. Until she was, like, wearing a sweater in this episode, or she had, like, her sunglasses on the top of her head. Pam is excellent.
Pam is excellent. Huge fan of Pam. No notes. And you know what? My opinion of this show, as it goes on, becomes more and more uneven. I don't think the show holds up to how good it is in the beginning. However, Pam always does. Pam never lets me down as a character.
100%. We're going to go through the plot of this episode. I've got this broken down into 3 different character groupings. We're going to talk about Sookie, and then Jason, and then finish up with what's going on with Tara. But, of course, we will talk more about Pam, more about Eric, of course, more about Bill, with the Sookie stuff, just because it's all about Sookie. This is
of
happening.
Yeah.
Everything's happening because of Sookie. Yeah, the aftermath of last week's cliffhanger is that Bill stakes Longshadow, and Sookie is This is like every single episode I feel like I'm saying like this is an iconic True Blood shot, but Sookie completely covered in blood, like looking a little shocky, I think is an iconic True Blood shot.
It's a Carrie, right? Like, you know, Carrie, yeah, covered in, yes, the pig's blood. Like, you know, someone covered in blood is always gonna be like, and they really go for it. Like, she is drenched in blood, like every single square inch of her is just red, her hair is covered in blood. It's great. I'm a huge fan of this because I think part of it too is just how like over the top campy it is, because like it's not even like he gets staked and like just a lot of blood comes spurting out. He like projectile vomits blood onto her and then explodes. Like, it's very over the, yes, top. It's very campy in a way that's more funny than it is gross.
Yeah, it's like slow rolling. Yeah. He does the projectile blood vomit and then he like kind of melts and then explodes. It's a nice follow-up from when we saw like the vampire soup in the coffins,
yeah,
in the previous episode, that it's like, yes, and this is the in-depth slow motion details of how vampire soup gets made.
Exactly. And I think I also love the juxtaposition of Sookie just like in complete shock over what just happened, just like can't say anything, is like kind of shaking a little bit, and then Ginger just like screaming in the background,
screaming.
Like, this whole the whole scene is just so funny while also still having like intense dramatic stakes to it.
Poor Ginger.
I know.
I mean, she's sitting there being like, how did I ever get involved with these people? What am I doing with my life? Eric tells Pam to glamour her, and Pam basically says, I don't know if she can handle that. And Eric is like, yeah, it's either glamour her or we have to turn her, because she can't. Eric goes on to talk in depth about how there cannot be witnesses to vampire on vampire murders, even if Long Shadow was going to kill Sookie, who is, as we all are well aware, property of Beale.
Yes.
He reminds the vampires all the time.
They also make poor Ginger clean up the vampire soup remains of Long Shadow. Like, she's like scrambling on the floor in those ridiculous high heels, just like wailing as she's like trying to like collect this,
it's
like
horrible
blood.
Later in the episode, when we learn that, like, oh, she has been glamored, and she gets introduced to Sookie again, Sookie doesn't actually comment on it because she has a lot of politeness ingrained in her, but it is so bizarre because Sookie's like, you are a party to, I mean, who knows how Sookie ranks the traumatic things that have occurred to her, but one of the more traumatic things that have occurred to Sookie, and Ginger just has absolutely no idea.
And what's crazy is that Sookie is still, like, she's wiped off her face, but her whole dress is still, like, covered in blood, and Ginger's just, like can't see it, or just, like,
I know, yes,
that it's,
I thought
like,
that,
fine.
Too.
Yeah.
I feel like you have vampire in your cleavage is like a top tier,
oh, top
iconic
tier
pan line.
Top tier pan line. And like, I was going to mention this later on in the episode and I probably will bring it up again, but like, Pam is a little like horny for Sookie. Like,
yes,
like
she's into,
she's,
I mean,
very flirty.
All the vampires
and,
are into, yeah, Sookie. She even admits, I see, I am starting to see what these men's are seeing in you.
Yeah, like, and, you know, it made me think, because since I know what happens, and not to get into any spoilers, but since I know kind of what happens with their relationship, this kind of made me a little sad that we never really get to see, like, oh, like, what if Pam had a shot? Like, what would that relationship,
yeah,
be like, you know? I think it'd be hot.
If they ever do a True Blood reboot, I really think they should consider going in that direction.
Yeah, Pam and Sookie. I think it would be a very interesting
Pam
couple.
Sookie,
yeah.
Have you ever watched the show Black Sails?
I have not, but it's been on my list forever.
So it's one of my favorite shows in the world, so I would highly recommend it. This isn't a Black Sails spoiler. It is just to say that there is a gif that I use a lot of one of the main women characters in Black Sails saying, there's too many goddamn men here. And I sort of feel like that is going to be something that we are going to be able to put into Sookie's mouth with ever more frequency as the show goes on.
Honestly, that might be something that Pam says at some point too, to be completely honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
With you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, you've got some vampire in your cleavage. clearly, like, Pam comes in and is just, like, automatically iconic. Like, this is, I mean, again, she was introduced in the last episode, but I feel like this is just such a good, like, this character is here to stay and she's amazing.
This almost feels like her introduction. We don't officially have her written down in character intros in that segment at the end of the episode, but every time we've seen her, she's been working the door and she's been in, like, a costume, because now we are seeing her in her sweaters and her PTA, like, realness. And we know that when she's left her own devices and she's not wearing the Fangtasia dress code, she is wearing pastels and beige and her hair in a nice little ponytail.
I think also we realize, I don't know if I realized before when I first watched this that she was so important. Like, I thought maybe she was just, like, a waitress or, like, you know, maybe a manager of, like, Fangtasia. Mm-hmm. This is really the episode that cements her as being Eric's, like, number two, right? Like, she's the person who's, like, getting all the shit done. And I really love how she owns it, because there's a scene later on where Bill says, you know, how is it being so far up Eric's ass? And she's like, it's great. You should try it sometime. And
it's
like,
great. I'm sure there are perks.
But I just love how she's like, yeah, this is what I do. Like, you're not going to offend me by, like, calling me out for it, because I already understand this about myself. Like, it's great.
I don't know if it's in a previous episode of the show, or it might be in the book, that we find out that Eric turned Pam, and that, I think this was in the book, Eric is Pam's maker, and she does her own thing, and occasionally comes back around and gets involved with whatever Eric's doing, and so that might be the canon in the show, or it might not, but it is fun to think of. When vampires came out of the closet, Eric wanted to start a bar, and he thought to himself, who should help me? He called Pam.
Clearly
and she
Pam.
Came from whatever activity she was doing.
Absolutely.
To help him out.
I mean, if I were starting a bar, I would also want Pam to manage it for me, because, like, you know that no shit's going to get past her. Like,
right, exactly. And because it seems like Eric isn't as into mainstreaming as Bill. I mean, we've never met any vampire that's as into mainstreaming as Bill. But Eric thinks it is sort of funny that Bill is doing this, and he's kind of mocking him a little bit, but I mean, he's like, let me buy you a blood. And it's funny because, like, you own the bar, like, you're not,
yeah,
you know, you're not really buying it for me, but he, like, microwaves it for him and everything. And, you know, he says, he makes this joke about True Blood keeps you alive but bores you to death.
Yeah, he is very amused by Bill, which is funny because, like, he's trying to impress upon Bill how serious what he just did was, but at the same time, he seems not shocked by it. Like, he's just very, like, I mean, and this is Eric, right? Like, he's been around forever. He's seen everything. Like, nothing really surprises him. I think until he meets Sookie and gets to know her a little bit better. But he's just, like, very calm and almost sardonic throughout this whole conversation.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated it, because he's very, like, you know, like, I'm not mainstreaming. I don't really understand, like, why you are. You know, he kind of taunts Bill a little bit about his feelings for Sookie. You know, like, oh, just admit that you're in love with her. And, you know, I just thought that it was really interesting, like, remembering kind of how he's introduced here.
Yeah, I do really like Bill and Eric's relationship as we're getting introduced to them, getting a little glimpse into whatever relationship they do have between them. Oh, there was something else I was going to say about Eric, and now I don't know if I can remember. Oh, Eric's telling Bill, like, no, I wasn't going to let Long Shadow get away with stealing from me, but I also wasn't going to murder him in front of witnesses. So it's like, you know, maybe we'll see Eric lose his cool in the coming seasons, or maybe we won't. Like, I would not be surprised if he never did ever. But it's funny that he can at least believably tell Bill he could.
Yeah.
You know, I believe what Eric says about at least this situation.
Yeah, it is interesting that, like, it's interesting here, too, because there's this moment where he says, like, you're going to have to, like, pay for this, or, like, give us something in return. And Bill says, mm-hmm. well, what? And he responds, well, you give us Sookie, basically. And Bill's obviously not a fan of that idea. The way that Eric, because Eric is so hard to read at this point in the series because of that, like, calm, like, unflappability, mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, it is menacing, for sure. Like, you know that at any moment he could, you know, do something. But, like, I almost wonder if in this moment, if this was partially a play for him to get Sookie. Like, I don't think, like, mm-hmm. as a romantic mm-hmm. interest, but, like, as a, like, person who can read minds, right? And, like, could possibly help be very helpful. Because the way he kind of says it, it almost sounds like he's sort of angling for that to be, like, it's either that he yeah. actually wants her or he wants Bill to at least admit that, like, she's important.
Yes. I think that, I, like, think both things are true. So, in the last episode, before we found out what happened in the end of this scene, Teja had said that she thinks that, you know, whatever happens here is, was all part of Eric's plan. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted the person stealing to get found out. He wanted Sookie to end up in danger. He wanted Bill to, you know, take care of it. And now I think you're completely right that there's power for Eric. If Bill would just give Eric Sookie, you know, Eric wins. That would be great for him. But there's also power in getting Bill to admit that he loves her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was no losing here for Eric, really, because he gets to come requisition Bill out of his life and leave Sookie unattended.
Exactly. Yeah, like, anything that happens after this scenario is in Eric's favor in a lot of ways, because mm-hmm. Bill now owes him, you know, and again, that could either come in the form of Sookie, or it could come in the form of yet to be undetermined favor in the future. You know, it could just be, you know, having that power over Bill, knowing that weak spot that Sookie is to him. So I honestly do think there's a lot of things going on behind this very calm facade that Eric has going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of this is a surprise to him.
Yeah, I'm with you. Bill and Sookie get home, and Sookie's cat.
This honestly
has been beheaded.
Is the most upsetting thing of
this
the entire
is horrible.
Show. Like,
it's
I hate
horrible.
It so much. I do not like animal violence, and thankfully, the scene is very quick. You don't like. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. Like, you see, it's so quick that there's no, like, details for you to really latch onto. In fact, I don't even think they realized that the cat had been beheaded until Sookie says it later. So, thankfully,
me too.
Like, we don't get, like, sad details about the cat. But
no, and we do get Bill saying, don't look up!
Yeah.
Don't look! But, of course, Sookie sees it. She's screaming, so.
Poor Tina.
I know. Tina! And now Sookie's all alone. You know, and Bill's there, being reassuring, telling her he's not going to let anything happen to her, which I honestly just find so disingenuous and just such, like, you know, masculine bullshit. I'm not going to let anything happen to you. Like, man, things have happened. Things have been happening to me. Can we just, like, acknowledge that me not being maimed or killed is not, like, the line for whether or not something bad has happened to me?
This episode really reminded me that Bill can be incredibly infantilizing of Sookie.
Mm-hmm.
He constantly thinks he knows what's best for her, or thinks that he's going to say the thing that's going to comfort her or, you know, cause her to act rationally or whatever, you know. I mean, and there's this, like, really weird line later where he's talking to Sam and he says something like, you know, she's stubborn or whatever. It's like, fuck you, dude. Like, it's just very, it's very patronizing, and it's very, like, Sookie doesn't know what's best for her. I know what's best for her. She needs to be protected, which, yeah, she does need to be protected because someone is clearly trying to kill her. But at the same time, she's not like a naive person, like, and she's not a child. You know what I mean? Like, she has, like, this sense of agency. She does make choices. And I really liked that line where she says, like, this is all happening because I chose this danger. Like, this isn't something that happened to me. This is something that I chose. And I thought that that was, I don't think he understood it at all. I don't think he took it in. But I did really like that she said that to him.
Yeah, especially because she's trying to explain to him, you want to protect me, you want to take everything off my plate. Like, if Bill had his way, Sookie would just be this, like, happy-go-lucky girl with, like, no problems ever, which would be great, but it's just not the reality. And so him, he's trying to take all the burdens from her, which on one hand is nice, but on the other hand, she's completely right, saying, like, if this is all your fault, then I fucking hate you.
Yeah.
And don't want to hang out with you. Like, at this moment, it's like a comfort for me to see your face, because I do think that you can keep me safe, and being around you, you know, brings me calm or whatever. And if you are the cause of all these bad things, then why would I seek comfort with you? Well, you know, like, come on,
and
Bill.
I think it's important also to remember that bad things have happened to Sookie before Bill ever
her
entered
the
picture.
Life.
Like,
yeah.
It's not all the vampires that have brought this into her life. I mean, like, we already know from earlier episodes that she was sexually assaulted as a child by a family member. We know that her parents died early. We know that she has, you know, this ability that, you know, makes it difficult for her to be around people, and it makes her afraid to confide in anyone because she knows that people will think she's crazy, or, you know, she'll get locked up at an institution. These are all legitimately mm-hmm. bad things that have happened to her already mm-hmm. that she has dealt with and that she has survived. And it just doesn't feel like he's giving her any benefit of the doubt in that area.
That honestly makes me a little bit frustrated with a part of this episode that kind of frustrated me already before we had this conversation, which is later when Bill is leaving with Pam and Eric, and he's trying to impress upon her that she can't come, and she's saying, like, no, I want to come, I want to testify for you. And I'm like, Sookie, you don't realize by now that, like, vampires have their own thing going, and, like, you being the lone human amongst them isn't a good thing. Like, at this point, I just really don't buy that she would have been, like, that stubborn about that specific thing to where Bill had to, like, shake her and yell at her.
Yeah. I don't think so either, especially because whenever she is around vampires, they all are inordinately obsessed with her. And I feel like that's something you just don't want. Like, you know, if that keeps happening, then at some point, maybe don't put yourself in that situation.
And she's just, like, really going through it. She goes to work and Sam's like, good morning, Sookie. Ain't nothing good about this morning.
Dude, if my cat died, even if it was like, I had to, like, put my cat down because they were old, and, like, that was sad enough when I had to do that, I would not be at work, much less if my cat died in a traumatic way. Like,
100%.
Like, I no wonder she's, like, so upset. And, like, I liked that Amy later is just like, why are you here? Like, that might have been, like, the one, like, reasonable, rational thing that Amy says all episode is, like, why are you here right now?
So that she would get the opportunity to tell off Andy Belfour, because he comes in for lunch, and she just basically tells him he's a shit cop, and she's right, and she should say
she should say that. I mean, like, ACAB includes the cops of this town as well. Andy Belfour is part of ACAB. Also, like, it does seem a little odd that there's, like, the violent murder in this town and the FBI have not shown up yet. Like, if this case had been cold, like, not solved or no progress on it for, like, a couple of days, I feel like the FBI would have showed up.
Well, and I feel like I think that if they are really thinking that, like, a vampire did this, I feel like in a world in which we have, like, supernatural creatures coming out of the closet to live amongst us, I feel like it would immediately be, like, an FBI task force to solve crimes.
Vampire
perpetrated
FBI.
By superhumans.
It's the spinoff show.
I mean, this is what all the urban fantasy I've ever read tells me would happen.
Exactly,
so 100%. That's all I'm
saying. I mean, yeah, no, I mean, you have to have, like, special law enforcement for, I guess, for...
Andy Belfour is not qualified to even catch this cat killer.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't know. And I do love that Sookie is like, you always order the cheeseburger and fries. Like, why are we still doing this charade that you're not going to order it? Just order it.
And then he orders it from Amy. I think it's really funny. I think that we will likely go through phases of whether or not we like Andy Belfour or not. I know we don't like him now, but I like him as a character a lot because he's just, like, a big dummy, and I think it's funny. And I think a lot of I think a lot of the stuff that we don't like about him will be softened when the, you know, the mystery, if you will, of the season isn't murders he can't solve.
Right, exactly. And when it's not his fault,
the murder is coming happening after the main character. Yeah. The scene that opens with Bill in front of a golf course.
Oh my god.
I was like, I totally forgot what this was. I was like, is Bill dreaming now? Like, do vampires dream? And then he's just playing Wii golf.
He's just playing Wii golf. What's weird about this is that this is at night. Like, I feel like he would be playing this during the day, because otherwise wouldn't he just go outside? It was very confusing to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god. Because he could just go outside and play golf at a golf course with, like, footlight. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I did love, I can't.
Maybe it's just because of the big-ass screen, like, outdoor immersive experience. He's got, like, a space heater going so he can, like, feel like, warm air like it's summertime.
I cannot remember this vampire's name, but the one that comes with Eric and Pam to collect Bill.
Chow.
What's his name?
Chow.
I loved how Chow, like, asks him about his score, and it's just,
and
like,
mine's, and he's better at Wii golf than
like
Bill.
It's such,
he's
a
so smug.
It's such a funny but weird exchange between the two of them. Like, it really highlights the fact that this show is campy as fuck, and sometimes it's like random as fuck too, and I really appreciate that.
The show is straight up silly. I think that I am excited to get to, like, the quote-unquote bad seasons, because, like, it's just silly nonsense, mm-hmm. and, like, I love that. I can't wait to, like, try to interrogate the logic of the show when none remains. Eric and Pam and Chow need to take Bill to this vampire tribunal, and he's like, I have to talk to Sookie first, which means that the whole gang goes to Merlot's, and you could hear a record scratch. I put a record scratch in the last episode, so I promise I won't do it again. But, like, that is exactly what it's like when they walk in. Everybody's looking at these vampires, and Eric tells them that they can tell when a human has wronged them. And I don't think that's true.
No.
But I think it's such a good tactic, especially for the Merlot cloud. Like, do not get comfortable. Don't get too comfortable. He knows who did the arson, because the man has, like, burns on his forearms.
Yeah.
I think I love seeing Eric, like, amongst the normals.
Well,
if you will.
And I know we're gonna talk about this more later, but I also really liked, because he was clearly looking at the guy who did the arson when he says that, but you can, in the shot, you can see Amy's face behind him,
mm-hmm.
and, like, she has mm-hmm. wronged them, like, badly, but of course, like, he doesn't see her, so, like, you know, whatever.
No.
But I also really like how much Pam and Eric stand out in Merlot's, not just because they're vampires, but just because, like, they're clearly, like, city people, like, in this, like, tiny
yes.
little town. Like,
yes.
Eric has this, you know, long blonde hair, and Pam is wearing
Eric's
her
t-shirt does not fit the way Hoyt Fortenberg's
no,
t-shirt fits.
No, not at all. He's buying, like, a size or two smaller, like, than Hoyt. And, you know, Pam, I think she's wearing a trench coat. She looks great.
Yes.
And so, like, you know, they look very fancy. They're clearly very snobby, too. Like, as soon as they come in, they're, like, you know, insulting Merlot's. They don't belong there, but, like, unlike Bill, I think everyone just kind of knows that, like, these are two people you do not fuck with. Because, like, the first episode, everyone was giving, like, Bill stink eye. I mean, part of it's because Beau was dressed like a fucking circus clown in, like, the first episode. But, like, you know, like, he's, like, dirty and shit. I won't get into it. But, these two, though, like, they don't get the same reaction as when Bill walked in. Like, it is very deferential, and it's very, like, we just want these people to leave.
Well, and we know now that the arson has made, I would presume, national news.
Yes.
Because we see, you know, the blonde lady, I think her name's Nan?
Nancy.
She, you know, the little vampire spokesperson, she says, like, we're not retaliating because we, like, as a gesture of goodwill, basically. So they know now that vampires know
mm-hmm.
that this originated here and that they're being controlled
yeah.
to not come to Merlot's and fuck them all up.
Yeah. Although I did really like what Eric said about, like, don't believe everything the little blonde lady tells you on the TV. Like, I really did like that little call out to her, because because I do feel like at this point, Eric is kind of the face of the anti-mainstreaming like crowd. Mm-hmm. And so like it is interesting to see that like contrasted.
I enjoy those like news broadcasts being comments upon, because if you're watching the show like less, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, with like less intentionality, I guess, like if you've been skimming the show and you haven't been watching those news broadcasts, and then he says that and you think to yourself, wait, what, blonde lady?
Yeah.
You know, you know he's basically saying like the stuff in the margins in the show like actually is important, like we are developing things on the TVs in the background that can come to the fore, you know, whenever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Bill asks Sam to protect Sookie while he's gone, which is annoying. Sam's like, I'm not doing it for you, Bill. I'm doing it for Sookie. Great. Even Sookie finds that annoying. She's like, I wish you would not have done this.
Yeah, so this is annoying and more patronizing on its face. But I think the thing that just, like, got me the most is the fact that Bill is so insistent to Eric and Pam about going to see Sookie, and then just basically like walks right past her to go talk to Sam about Sookie. Like, he doesn't even talk to her first. It, like, to me, it's just like, yeah, I mean, if he had said like, sit down, honey, the men are talking, like, it would not have been out of place in this episode.
It definitely has that vibe. Yeah. It definitely has that vibe. I always put my book stuff not in the book section. Apologize if people feel strongly about that. But here's my book stuff about this, which is in the book. Elvis Presley is a vampire, and he was turned by like a morgue worker vampire when he was like on the brink of death. Like, he was just slightly alive when he ended up in the morgue, and so this morgue worker vampire turned him, and he came back mentally incorrect. And so he gets very agitated when he hears the name Elvis, and so he goes by Bubba, and Bill enlists Bubba to watch over Sookie.
That's amazing.
While he goes to the vampire tribunal.
I need to read and these every books. Like,
people in town have like seen him and been like, "Oh my god, that vampire! Like, he looks like." And people are like, "No, don't say it.
He doesn't like that name."
I don't even know if they actually say Elvis in the book, but they make
it's very
clear
that
they call him like,
yeah,
the man from Memphis. Oh, that singer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they talk about like how jowly he is and everything.
Yeah.
So you know it's him. Yeah. Bill and Sookie completely make out before Bill leaves for this trip in front of a whole entire studio audience. I was like, I have the chills right now. Eric, not me.
Yeah, that was hilarious. But I also thought, like, we don't know what chills Pam is feeling right now. I feel like Pam is getting turned on by this. Like, she's like,
she's
like, I would watch this. And Eric is just like bored. He's just like, no, this is not
my thing. We already know Pam thinks that Sookie is hot.
Exactly.
We don't know much about the sexual orientations of these other vampires, but like, Bill's hot.
Yeah.
They've all been around together a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel
things could have happened.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Tara and Sookie reunite. It's really nice. It's like one of those like real best friend things where Tara's like, I'm so sorry. And Sookie's like, I literally do not remember. I would just prefer to have a hug.
When you get to the point where you're just like, yeah, I'm mad, but like, I'm so tired of dealing with this and feeling this way to someone that I know I'm going to forgive it eventually. So like, let's just cut to that part. It felt very, it felt very relatable and identifiable as something that actually does happen.
Yes. Which is, and like, I think a lot of times it's even less commented upon than that. You know, sometimes you get into it with someone and then you just fall back into the pattern with them and everyone just acknowledges that.
Yeah.
sometimes things go wrong. It's okay. But yeah, they're reunited. It's nice. Sookie's gonna go stay at Bill's house because no one will look for her there.
That's extremely not
it's
okay.
It's so dumb. What do you mean? For one, you guys are neighbors.
Yeah.
Neighbors.
Yeah, like, there are so many places she could have gone that would have been less likely to have been looked for. She could have stayed with Tara. Like,
if a murderer is gonna come kill you because of your fraternization with vampires, I don't think that the place to hide from this murderer is in the vampire's home when the whole town knows he's not there. Like, it's so obvious. I can't believe she'd even say that. She just wanted to stay at his house. That's fine.
Yeah, just say that then. Yeah. Very, very not great logic on Sookie's part.
She just wanted to get out of there because she saw Sam and Tara making out.
Yeah.
She's like, this is crazy. I gotta go.
Yeah.
And
not just Sam making out, like Sam was like buckling his belt up when he came out.
Yes.
Like, they had sex in that back room.
Yes. And Sookie got out of there before she saw it, which is smart. Yeah. For sure. Obviously they don't, I thought it was funny that when I watched the episode, like, oh, Sam's buckling his belt, like, you know, they definitely had sex. I was like, you guys just finished? And then I remembered, like, oh, they did. They didn't see her.
Yeah.
She just saw them. So it's not as weird, but it's still a little
also
weird.
Very fun product placement of Bombay Blue Sapphire gin in the background of that scene. Like, they're basically fucking up against the gin. Like,
oh my god, that's
like
because really
it's against
the
shelf.
They're like extra for a sex scene. Andy Belfour is like, Sam, I caught on to your bullshit. Sam, can't do this right now. And then, wow, what a coincidence, a little dog runs past Andy Belfour, goes home with Sookie. She brings it into her bed and names it Dean.
This is a great supernatural joke. Like, and I did not get that until watching the episode this time. Supernatural started in 2005. This was 2008.
Wow, okay.
So it would have been a couple years later. So I legitimately believe, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. If this is a joke in the books and the books are older, fine.
No.
But, like, I think this is great.
I mean,
this feels like them calling out another show that deals with, like, supernatural stuff. And that was very insanely popular at the time. I mean, at the time, I think the fandom of Supernatural was probably bigger than the initial fandom of True Blood.
Oh, like, I bet.
So, yeah, it just feels very fun that she named a dog who is actually Sam Dean.
Dean. And then I thought of this one when we were talking about taboos in the intro. I think that probably Sam would prefer that he didn't wake up naked in Sookie's bed and thus outing himself as a shape-shifting something or other, because this is the cliffhanger of the episode.
Yeah, I do have two notes about Sam here at the end. One, and this is, you know, this season didn't really know what to do with Sam in a lot of ways, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But part of my problem with Sam as a character is that they keep making it out like his shape-shifting abilities allow him special skills in protecting Sookie. Like, Bill's like, you're the only one who can, like, protect her. Well, like, I know you have what it takes to protect her while I'm gone. And I'm just sitting here going, like, this dog is like a collie. Like, I don't, like, right. I don't understand. Like, I'm not saying that, like, a dog can't protect you, but, like, against a vampire, like, you know, it feels very weird that, like, it's this, like, very, and that's my second point. This dog is adorable. Like, I don't know, like, like, I think it's the same dog that we've been seeing all season.
Yeah, I think
but,
so.
But, like, he is so cute. And I don't know what they did to get him to, like, look away from her. But it was so cute when she's, like, taking her pants off and he's just, like,
yes,
like, moving his head to the side.
I'm honestly surprised that Sam, like, did that.
Yeah, Sam is very creepy.
Even in dogs.
But I do love this dog. like, he's great.
Yes. Dean is
great. Great Sam, dog acting. Here.
Okay, while we're here at the cliffhanger, let's put this cliffhanger into a ranking.
Okay.
So I think it's hard to say because I do think that the season builds up to this in a probably a successful way. However, I've always known it, so I just have like no objective like way to tell if this is like an actual shocking reveal. So if we think that it is an actual shock to find out that, like, oh my god, Sam can turn into a dog, then I think that this cliffhanger probably goes, like, more in the top half. But if we think that it's, like, been spelled out enough that once it happens, it's like, oh, okay, that happened, you know, it goes more on the bottom, like, more akin to, like, Sookie showing up at Bill's house and weird eyes back tattoo vampires there.
Yeah, I actually think it belongs more in the bottom half. I actually think that the cliffhanger is supposed to be not that Sam is the dog. I think that, like you said, has been pretty spelled out by the series.
Okay, yeah.
I think the cliffhanger is supposed to be, oh, Sookie knows now. Like, how is she going to react?
Oh, but yeah.
But the problem is that, like, we just haven't seen them on screen enough together for me to, like, actually care about the stakes of this. You know, like, I mean, I'm interested in her reaction, but this isn't, like, you know, this isn't, like, the reveal in Vampire Diaries that, like, Stefan is a vampire, like, in season one to Elena. Like, that you're just like, oh my god, like, what is she gonna think? You know, how is she gonna react to this? Because they have a lot of investment in that relationship, and we have a lot of investment in that relationship, and this is a threat to the relationship. This, I'm just kind of like, eh. Like, he's creepy, she doesn't care about him, like, I don't...
If anything, she's gonna be like, you've been a goddamn hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so this to me, I was not invested in her reaction the way I would have been if it maybe had been a different revelation with a different character.
Okay, so do we think that this is more or less cliffhangery than the time Sam went to Dawn's bedroom and sniffed and writhed around on her bed?
That was so weird. Yeah, I think so. I think I would put it
more
between Sookie turns up at Bill's house and Weird Eyes back tattoo vampire is there, and...
So yeah.
So below that,
this is gonna
above,
be our new number 7.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Okay, so that's our new number 7 cliffhanger. It's so exciting. Yeah,
not the best cliffhanger of the show.
Not the best cliffhanger.
Although we do get to
not
see
the best cliffhanger.
I will say though, I did appreciate the humor of her being like, "You're on my foot," and then it's Sam on her foot. Like, that was funny.
What the fuck? Yeah, it is funny.
Because he was clearly not expecting. I don't know if he just thought that he wasn't gonna fall asleep and then accidentally fell asleep and shifted back, but he was clearly not expecting to wake up naked
in
her bed.
No, not at all. I swear if in the next episode he's like, I was just so comfortable sleeping next to you that I will. I will.
You will long shadow projectile vomit.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so we get to spend, unfortunately, a lot more time with Jason and Amy and the aftermath of their vampire kidnap. Jason is a little upset about having done this, and he tells Amy, any woman with a purse that big is bound to have something I don't want to know about. And I think that is so funny.
Jason is also a character that will never let me down. It's really Pam and Jason, top tier characters of True Blood. Yes. He is so funny here because he just... Yeah, he's very funny. He basically accuses her of, like, says she has crazy eyes and, like, is just like, I should have known the whole time that I was going to end up here, even though this is a wildly, like, improbable situation I found myself in.
When you showed up with your bag full of crazy. Yeah, and she's, like, telling him, like, Jason, you really need to mellow out, like, chill, bro. And it's like, yeah, Jason definitely should relax as he commits felonies while being suspected of murder. It's definitely a cool, very chill time for Jason. I can't believe that he's having feelings.
And then she
about
turns
this.
On like some spy yoga, like meditation, like music, and is like, listen to this. And he's like, what is this? And she's like, shh, listen to this. Like, that is not gonna calm him down.
It goes better for her this time, but I don't know what's more annoying, like her playing that music for him when, in my opinion, he's completely right in the reaction he's having, or the time when he's lightheaded due to hunger and she feeds him a fucking almond.
Almond. The raw almond is one of my favorite details of this whole episode. It is just so funny to me that she's like, oh, you need to eat something, and then she feeds him. She goes, it's not just that she feeds him a raw onion, almond. Blah, I don't know what I'm saying. It's not just that she feeds him a raw almond. It's that she says, here, have an almond. It's raw. Like, that's like a way to explain how the almond was prepared. Like, it was just, it was so perfect. And like, it is really this character in a nutshell, literally in a nutshell, in a lot of ways, because she's just like, of all the foods, it's a raw almond, which I always associate with health-conscious white women who are just like,
yes,
a handful of almonds.
Almond moms.
Yes. And so, like...
And you know what the thing is? is almonds are a filling snack, and they are used as snacks and not for meals, and they also have a ton of salt on them if they're good. So cleaner raw food, cleaner the soul, cleaner the body, all that shit. If I would be sustaining on almonds, I'm not. But if I was, they would have tons of salt.
But so, also,
it's not a clean soul.
Jason's reaction to the raw almond is so funny too, because he just has this look of like complete surprise and joy on his face. And all I could think about is like, Gran never fed him a fucking almond in her life. Like, Gran is like making like, everything.
She didn't have a nipple?
Like, he like does not know what this tastes. I don't think he's ever tasted a raw food before. Like, he just feels like,
right?
It just feels like he's been living off of like stuff deep fried in grease his whole life, and suddenly someone hands him like something that just came off a tree. Just like, eat this. Like, that's the vibe he's given off here.
Yes. I mean, I am happy for him to find out the joys of like a fruit and nut parfait. Yeah. Like, I think that this is gonna be
I also
beautiful
think he's drinking
him,
a smoothie at the end of that scene. Like, I don't know what it is exactly, but it looks like one of those, like, you know, the like Bolt House juice smoothies that they sell like at like the raw juice, okay, or whatever at like the supermarket.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's what it looks like he's drinking.
I just think it's so annoying that Amy is going on about like how pure her, just like everything Amy does is terrible. So we're gonna loop back around to their little picnic they do, but they are gonna have sex for real this time, right in front of Eddie, and he is tied up and they're drinking his blood, and it is so inappropriate and so fucking weird. And she's like pausing at the beginning to like look at Eddie and like thank him for his blood, and it's like, you are like a cocoa melon. You're crazy. Like, you, this is all, everything you say and do is like bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. And I find it very like, it's Amy's fascinating to me in the sense that like, she's, like you said, it, what she's doing is kind of this elaborate bullshit, and whether or not she believes it or not, we haven't really like determined that yet, because she does kind of seem like an entitled white lady, so she could really believe in this, or it could just be something that she's like performing to gain, I don't know, attention, credibility, whatever. But like the fact that she is very like everything is connected and like clean mind, clean body, and yet she can with a straight face say, oh, that's not a person, like that's a thing, like, you know, about Eddie, it just, it feels so much like, and I'm not saying that the show is good about the nuances of race at all, but it does feel a lot like that, like, classic Karen, like, I'm going to go to yoga, and I'm going to, like, eat my raw almonds, and I'm going to, like, try to make myself a better person, or at least perform making myself a better person. But when it comes to actually treating someone who's different than me, like, a fucking human being, like, I'm just going to, like, let them die. Like, you know, like, I'm not, you know, my convenience is worth more than your life, basically. And that's kind of 100%. The vibe that I'm getting here.
Because she's giving this speech about how clean living, like, enhances the way that, like, the V works, which I'm sure that that is true. Like, that makes sense to me. But there's literally nothing clean about doing a kidnapping. Eddie cries. Like, he cries his precious blood watching you have sex with Jason. It is heartbreaking.
Well, and the way he, like, he even begs Jason not to drink his blood. Like, begs him not to drink it. And it feels, this feels like such a violation of Eddie in, like, so many ways. Mm-hmm. It's not just because of the kidnapping and all that stuff. Like, it genuinely feels like there are so many non-consensual things happening here in terms of them taking his blood, in terms of them drinking his blood, which, as we know from Bill and Sookie's relationship, often creates a bond with the vampire. So it feels like they're doing that.
Especially with the way they're doing it, like, right out of them. I'm sure that that, like, enhances that.
So, like, that feels very non-consensual, that they're, like, establishing this bond with him against his will. They have sex in front of him. He's a non-willing, you know, part of their kink, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it really does feel awful, like, watching this scene, because he is so, like, traumatized by it.
And he's just such a sweet guy. Like, we learn so much more about him through this episode while he's talking to Jason. But even before that, like, Amy can't even understand what Jason is saying about, like, even if you don't consider him a person, which you absolutely shouldn't, it's fucked up that you don't. Even if you don't, like, she can't even see Eddie as something as, like, valuable as, like, a vehicle.
Yeah.
Or a tool that needs maintenance. Or, a coffee maker that you clean with vinegar once every 6 months or whatever. Like, even that she thinks is beneath Eddie. And it's just, he is at the base level, like, he's producing the thing that you're ingesting. So, like, it's unfathomable, like, the depths to which she... Like, I mean, she's, like, full of hatred. Like, there's hate in her clean soul.
100%. She's the one who, like, matters the most. And I did appreciate Eddie saying to Jason later in the episode, like, don't marry her. She's a psychopath. She's way worse than I am. Because I think that's true. And again, to kind of connect that back to, like, I think that she is kind of a white lady metaphor in a lot of ways. Because she really does only care about herself and her convenience and will shape these weird ass beliefs around whatever is going to get her whatever she wants. I will say that I enjoy it whenever Jason talks in metaphor or like tries to put together a metaphor. It's a good metaphor. Like, I'm not disputing that. Like, the fact that he's able to say, well, like, my truck isn't a person, but I still put gas in it. That to me is just so funny because it feels like such high level thinking for Jason. Like, I'm just like, give him a treat.
And then what's crazy is that, like, the time with Amy actually is benefit. There are benefits for Jason.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably going to be outweighed by whatever horrible thing is going to happen with this. But because Jason is just really upset about not caring for Eddie, and I just wonder if this experience wouldn't have happened to him if he ever would have realized that that is, like, something that he values.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of this show, we were joking, I mean, I know you've listened to the episode, we were joking the last time I was on here about how this whole show is kind of about Jason's sexual awakening, but you can honestly say that this show is also kind of about Jason just, like, self, like, realizing, like, a lot. He's a very non-self-actualized person at the beginning of the show. He feels a lot of things that he doesn't understand or that he can't interpret, and he's very reactive. And so it would be very interesting as the show goes on to see if he's able actually to sort out, like, actually realize these feelings and thoughts and values that he has.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on with him, even outside of the stuff with Amy in this episode. He attacks Renee when Renee is doing whatever their job is, like, cutting the roots of this tree. And Jason's like, no, it's connected to that tree. Like, you can't cut it. And Renee is pissed because what he does puts them at danger. And Renee's like, I have a wife. I have kids. Like, I cannot believe you think that this tree is, like, more important than me because you basically set us up to get attacked by, you know, whatever piece of machinery he was working. And then he attacks Hoyt for calling him Jay, which I think is so weird. And that is definitely something that I believe should be unpacked.
Yeah.
By this show.
This scene was so interesting to me because for a moment it seemed like Jason was really buying into Amy's bullshit, which is why he tackled Hoyt, because he was trying to emulate that, I guess. Or Jason really needs to, like, pick better people to fuck. But so that's why he tackles Renee. Renee calls him out on what he says as being legitimately stupid. Because he's just, and I mean, he's rightfully mad. Like, Jason could have hurt him or killed him. He does have, you know, kids, you know, stepkids, etc., relying on him. You know, he does have Arlene relying on him. You know, it's very much a, like, I don't care. Like, that's not my life, right? Like, my life is I have to be alive so I can provide for these people. And then it felt like Jason was reacting to that when he told Hoyt not to call him Jay. So, like, I don't know if that was just Jason, like, taking that anger out on somebody else, or maybe he was, like, snapping back into, like, his usual persona. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of this episode, we've got Jason helping Eddie out, with trying to switch his business into the chair so he's more comfortable, and then actually brings him True Blood. So.
Yeah, and we get, because True Blood is, as we've talked about, as you have talked about many times on the show, it is a metaphor in a lot of ways for LGBTQ issues and battles for rights, etc. The metaphor mm-hmm. becomes explicit text here, because Eddie talks about realizing that he was gay and mm-hmm. realizing that he wanted to be a vampire. And I really actually liked the scene where he described that, because it sounded very, it almost sounded Matrix-y in the way that he was talking about yeah. his life before he realized he was gay. Because, you know, even just the way that he delivers that line, like, how could she know? I didn't know, you know? And, you yeah. know, everything is conditioning. Yeah. Like, you realize that life, everything about you is conditioning. And, like, I loved that conversation. I mm-hmm. also really enjoyed Eddie when Jason is, like, a fucking asshole and says, like, I didn't think gay people looked like you. Eddie's telling Jason, oh, yeah, we're supposed to look like you. I just thought that was great. I loved that.
Yeah, Jason 100%.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I feel like there was one more Eddie thing I wanted to say, and now I'm not remembering it. Oh, well.
Do we think Eddie is going to... Do we think that he's setting Jason up so he can get away? I couldn't really tell if he was kind of putting it on a little bit. I think all the things he says to Jason are real, but I yes. wonder if he's kind of... trying to bond with Jason so he can, like,
I wonder if it, well, and I do you think that it's just a miscalculation then, that Eddie, like, said something against Amy to Jason?
I think he's trying to feed on Jason's doubts about Amy, because yeah. even though Jason and, yeah. reacts, because Jason often does this where he reacts to something and then 5 minutes later he's like, well, maybe that's right, you know? And so I do wonder if maybe he was just trying to, like, plant that seed of doubt.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I do, I mean, I definitely do think that Eddie is specific, like, Eddie noticed right away that Jason is not this person and would prefer to not be this person. And I think that Eddie knows that if he can get to a space where he's influencing Jason just the slightest bit, or then Amy's influencing Jason, then he could potentially get out of this. Oh,
absolutely. Before we move on to Tara, though, I had forgotten about this, and I did want to mention it because it was the other line in the episode that made me laugh a lot. It was actually near the beginning of the episode when they first take the V from Eddie, and, you know, he's freaking out, and Amy's like, you gotta live in the now, Jason. And Jason's like, oh, I'm all about the now. Sometimes months at a time will go by, and I haven't had a single thought in my head. And I was like, I believe that.
I love that for Jason. I'm honestly jealous. Yeah, like, how are you doing this?
How are you not thinking for months at a time? And can you teach me?
Right. Well, yeah. And Tara's thinking about getting an exorcism.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten about this storyline.
Yeah, she goes and visits Miss Jeanette, and they're having a nice conversation. The cup of rum is free. She's wondering if this is possibly going to work for her, because she doesn't really believe in it. And, like, yes, her mom is cured, but is there something to her mom's belief that is causing her to be cured?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this is hard for Tara, because the only thing that's making her maybe find it a little bit more believable is the fact that she's never seen her mom get sober like this, mm-hmm. right? Although, mm-hmm. I have to say, her mom is fucking mean. When she's so yeah. like really, really fucking yes. mean. But I think, though, part of the issue is that, like, as someone who's had family members who have, like, gotten religion and then become sober, like, mm-hmm. there is, I mean, I won't say that there isn't something about religion, organized religion, that doesn't help provide, like, a structure, I guess, that some people find helpful. But I don't know if Tara is knowledgeable enough, or perhaps aware enough, to realize that it could just be the religion that's, like, helping her mom be sober, like, just the structure of it itself.
Yeah, or the, like, you know, the
yeah,
her mom had the exorcism, it made her feel strong enough to go back to church, and once she got there, you know, that structure in that community, like, kicked in to help.
Right. But Tara, I think, you know, also... Tara, she says later to Sam that she's fucked up and broken, which is just, like, such a heartbreaking thing to hear from Tara. I think that Tara almost wants it to be true because that means there's something she could do to, like, solve the pain that she has inside. And there is something she can do, but it requires a lot of self-work. It requires, you know, a therapist. It requires, you know, a lot of stuff, which she doesn't have access to. So I think for her, it's like, well, if there's a demon inside, then I can fix it. I can remove it. It's not my fault, right? Whereas if there isn't, if she doesn't believe it, which she's not inclined to, then it is about her, right? It is about, like, something inside of her is broken. And so I think that's maybe why she kind of is drawn to it a little bit as well.
Yeah, and then Miss Jeanette, I mean, really gets right in there, close to home, telling her she can't afford to keep pushing people away. And this happens before Tara and Sookie are reunited. So at this moment, Tara's on the outs with Sam. Tara's got a weird thing going on with her mom. You know, her and Sookie are on the outs. So, I mean, Miss Jeanette either is who she says she is, or she is very perceptive, because Tara's exorcism is going to be twice as many dollars as her mom's.
$800 is a lot. And especially for someone who's bartending in a small town like that.
Who just paid the four for her mom's exorcism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Miss Jeanette tells Tara to look in the mirror for 10 seconds, and if she can't, then, you know, she needs to make changes. Like,
yeah.
So she's trying to do that. Her mom interrupts her because Sam's at the door and he has flowers, which would be a nice thing, except for Letty Mae just has to say what she says about it, which is like, men only bring you flowers if they've already had sex with you and they want to do it again.
Yeah. I will say, as mean as her mom is and as horrible as she is, I did find the part at the beginning where she walks in and Tara's like, what if I was doing something personal? And she's like, I taught you that was a sin. So if I walked in on you doing it, that would be your problem.
That's your problem, not
very
mine.
Very funny. I really enjoyed that. Sam's apology is so weird. It's like a non-apology apology. It's like, I am sorry if I did anything that could have possibly, like, it's just so, like, he, like, almost mumbles it the first part of it too.
Yes.
Like,
it would be nice if he could just say, I'm so sorry that you're obviously going through something and you don't feel comfortable enough to share it with me. However, I would very much enjoy having sex with you again and potentially hearing about your problems. Like, that's all you have to say. Like, you know,
it doesn't have to be this whole thing. And, like, yeah, I feel like Tara is right to not want a relationship with Sam. I would not want one either.
Yes.
However, I'm afraid, and especially based on the end of the episode where they have sex, I'm afraid that she's going to throw herself into a relationship with Sam because she doesn't want to be the person that pushes people away. To be fair, you can work on not being the person who pushes people away and also not date Sam. like it doesn't have to be, that doesn't
Sam
have to be your proof
is kind of an appropriate person to push away.
Exactly.
You know, currently. She reminded him that he's a social animal, which I thought was a clever little line in this here episode when we find out that he can shapeshift into a dog.
I love it. It's great.
So he leaves the money for the exorcism in her cubby at work. Vaguely inappropriate. And then he decides that he wants to put up a boundary around when and where they talk about the money, which is actually just his terms. And so, okay, how nice for Sam to think about having a boundary with his female employees at work, his women employees.
Shocking.
when they eventually talk about it, all boundaries are gone. Now they can make out and have sex at work.
Against the Blue Sapphire.
against the Bombay Blue Sapphire. And, like, Sam's boundaries are completely arbitrary. And if he could have just held that one up for a mere moment longer, Sookie would have never seen them making out. And now she knows.
And now she knows, and it's very upsetting to her. Why is it so upsetting to her? I feel like this is contrived drama a little bit. I'm not sure I actually believe Sookie would be that mad about this, in my opinion.
I feel like I feel like here's what I think Sookie could be upset about. And she hasn't said anything to us about it, so we don't know. But I think for me, if I'm Sookie, I'm upset that Tara's giving me shit about keeping secrets, and here I find out that she's been making out with Sam, who is someone who has been hitting on me relentlessly for weeks, and now I know that Sam, who's been hitting on me relentlessly for weeks, is willing to also hook up with my best friend. So, like, you're obviously not good enough for my best friend.
Okay, so I see. So it's more about Sam. Those are things
I would be upset about. I don't think it's a jealousy.
It would be more about Sam being a shitty person than it would be about, like, jealousy.
Yeah, it would be like, you're really going to try... Two things. Like, you're really going to try to hit on me and make me feel bad for not wanting to date you. That's inappropriate on one level. And on the second level, while you're also trying to date my best friend, like, do you really think that I'm going to compete for a man with my best friend? And do you think that I think that my best friend should be with someone who's also hitting on other girls?
Exactly. Yeah, no, okay. I can accept that as being, like, a good reason to be upset. Because I just don't buy it that Sookie cares enough about Sam. Like, to me, I felt like this season kind of, like, wanted us to believe that Bill, Sookie, and Sam were in a love triangle. But it made, like, the most half-hearted attempt to convince us of that. Yes. And I don't actually believe it.
Same with Sookie, Sam, and Tara.
Yes, exactly.
Like... Keep Sookie out of this Sam narrative, please.
Yes, I don't need Sam entangled in what's happening here.
Yeah, so if in the next episode Sookie's like, I'm jealous,
I'll be mad, to be honest with you. That feels like a real betrayal of this character, and it also doesn't feel like they've done enough work to convince me that she would be jealous.
Yes, and I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I just wanted to keep that
future
out there.
Reference.
Yes, and... With that, I think we did it.
Yeah. I think that's most of the stuff that happened in this episode. There is another thing I wanted to bring up because I forgot and then remembered halfway through. The dress that Sookie wears back from Fantasia.
Yes.
First of all, hot. Very hot. Yes. Like, it's like a black leather corset dress. I think it's a dress. It could either be a dress or it's like a skirt and corset combo. But they're like the same.
Yeah, but they're the same material. It's, if it's not a dress, it's a two-piece
It's a two-piece set. It's a matching set. And then like the highest stiletto heels I have ever seen in my life. Like Ben is...
Did she borrow those from Ginger?
Bill is having to like help her up like the stairs because she's like tottering on these heels. So here's my question. Is this one of Pam's Fantasia outfits or is it one of Ginger's?
I think that the dress is Pam's and potentially the shoes are Ginger's. I don't think Ginger wears that much clothes. Okay. I think Pam was like, I don't think Sookie's going to be willing to wear the little, you know, triangle top that Ginger wears.
That's fair. I just know it's hot and I would actually also love to see Pam in this outfit.
It's definitely hot, yeah. Okay. What is your most chaotic thing for this episode?
Most chaotic thing. Honestly, I think the most chaotic thing in this episode was Bill playing golf on the Wii. Just because it's so random. Like, it's just so, like...
It is so... Because we have no idea who Bill is as a person.
The entire, like, narrative of this episode grinds to a halt for, like, an entire minute so we can talk about Bill's golf game on the Wii. And that's just very chaotic to me. That is this show... like being like let's pause and do something very silly.
I think my most chaotic thing is more of a character thing, which is Jason attacking Renee over the tree and then immediately attacking Hoy over a nickname. It's just like, what's going on with you, my guy,
right now?
Okay, what is your most horny thing of this episode?
Oh, it's always going to be Jason for me. If Jason's in an episode of True Blood, he's probably going to be the most horny person. I do think
probably horny.
I do think that it is very horny for you to ignore your internal moral compass so you can finally get laid from the girl that's been leading you on for like episodes.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
You know, like, oh, what is it about, you know, committing a crime against another living being so I can get laid? But I will say that,
like, the horniness is so strong that the fact that he's committing moral crimes that he truly doesn't agree with does not even affect
no not at all
he does not have the same issue from
no.
beginning, from the beginning of the season.
I also really enjoyed their sex scene. I mean, even though it was really disturbing to see Eddie, like, crying while it was happening, I did enjoy the fact that they're, like, floating through different landscapes while they're having sex because they're, like, you know, on V. I also find that incredibly horny. I will say, though, Pam is giving him a run for his money this week in the scene where she pulls the vampire out of Sookie's cleavage. That was also extremely horny.
That was very horny. Mine is this Eric moment when they are in the bar and Bill's going back to Sam's office and he's telling Eric to behave himself and Eric's like, "Don't I always?" And I'm like, "That is code for you do not, sir," and I would love to know more.
I would love to know more about their history. They clearly have like a lot of it and it's always interesting when people have a lot of history.
Prequel? like I said, I always end up putting my book stuff in the meat of the episode, so I really don't have anything for the spoilers and book sections. Do you?
I don't. I haven't read the books. I've only seen the show, so.
Okay. So in that case, do you want to do your plugs?
Yeah. So I have a podcast called Nanny Ox Book Club where my friend Nigel and I are reading through all 41 of Terry Pratchett's Discworld novels. I believe as of the Friday after we're recording this, I'll be releasing the episode on Monstrous Regiment, which is the 32nd book. So we're like within the last like 10 books of the series, which is incredible to me. You can find that on Blue Sky at Nanny Ogg's Book Club and on Instagram at Nanny's Book Club. I also have been writing a lot for Movie John. I recently did a review of Pod Generation, and I also have upcoming stuff on scary movies for October, specifically a second part to my Ranking of Dracula villains, Ranking of Dracula actors. So I'm very excited about that coming up. You can find that on moviejohn.com. That's moviejawn.com.
Perfect. You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow. I do an occasional podcast hosted on the YouTubes called Wild Pretty Things. That's not super often, but sometimes I will be there doing some stuff. We would like to thank DJ Empirical for our theme song. It's the best.
Our amazing.
You can find the pod. Yes, it's so good. Every time I edit the episode, I listen to the full theme.
It's great.
Every time.
It's great.
I'm like, I just want to tweak one small little thing at the beginning of this transition. No, I need to listen to the whole thing.
The whole thing.
again, you can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at BangBangersPod with a Z. You can email us your chaotic, horny, true blood thoughts at FangBangers@gmail.com. Next week, we'll be covering the episode I Don't Want to Know. And until then, I'm Melissa, and my blood type is a large women's bag.
And I'm Tessa, and my blood type is almonds. They're raw.
Okay.